Welcome to the teaching ministry of North Coast Church in Vista, California. In this multi-part series titled Extreme Makeover Life Edition, we'll be taking a closer look at some of life's key relationships. So open your Bibles with us to Ephesians as we join Pastor Chris Brown for today's message.
Right now we come as a time to continue worship through your word. And God, I pray that today it will be clear. God, once again, I rely on you who wrote this book through men to continue to teach us today. That God, we give you these scriptures, and then God, you're the one that has the meaning for each and every one of us. And you're the only one, God, that could allow one voice and one message, God, to be interpreted by so many lives today that everyone can go home knowing they've heard from you. And so, God, may you give us that wisdom. May you give us that clarity, God. May each one of us be able to walk out of here today knowing that we have climbed up into your lap, that we have heard from you. And God, if there's something that needs to be changed, may we be the ones that change, God, to your word. In your name, amen. Well, if you're kind of just joining us, over the last couple of weeks, we started this extreme makeover, life edition. And the first 2 weeks, we looked at marriage. And Larry did an amazing job of just breaking down some of the myths of marriage and putting it in order. Last week, we looked a little bit more at the practical sense of how do we love, how do we serve, how do we put someone else first. And then as we follow in the book of Ephesians, if you're not there yet, we're in chapter 6. Ephesians 6 kind of jumps off and it goes right into parenting. And this is one of those weekends that I told Larry, you know what I'm not doing? I don't have the history of that. I can get up and say, you know what? My teenagers have never once talked back to me. I've never once had an argument with my teenagers for the simple fact I don't have teenagers. And that day will come. That day will come shortly. And I feel like, okay, credibility-wise, I don't have the years of experience parenting-wise to really talk about parenting. 17 years of working with teenagers, specifically high school and college students in youth ministry. I think I've lived amongst them and know their culture and some heartfelt needs. And yet, coming to this passage, I'm like, okay, Larry was gone this week, I was gone this week, I'm the first one back, I get the teaching. How do we make sense out of this? Where do we go? Where do we start? How do you sum up parenting? And luckily, I found a job description of parenting. Actually, it comes from the famous theologian Ann Landers. And it says, finally, parents get a job description. Position, parent. Job description, long-term player. Needed for challenging permanent work in chaotic environment. Candidates must possess excellent communication and organizational skills and be willing to work evenings and weekends and frequent 24-hour shifts. There is some overnight travel required, including trips to primitive camping sites and rainy weekends and endless sport tournaments in faraway cities. Travel expenses not reimbursed. Responsibilities? Must keep this job for the rest of your life. Must be willing to be hated, at least temporarily. Oh, but you know, there's some truth in there, isn't there? Okay, then. Don't boo me. I'm just reading Ann Landers. Must be willing to bite tongue repeatedly. Must possess the physical stamina of a pack mule. Must be willing to tackle stimulating technical challenges such as small gadget repair, sluggish toilets, and stuck zippers. Must handle assembly and product safety testing as well as floor maintenance and janitorial work. Must screen phone calls, maintain calendars, coordinate production of multiple homework projects. Must have the ability to plan and organize social gatherings for clients of all ages and level of mentality. Must be willing to be indispensable 1 minute and an embarrassment the next. Must assume final complete accountability for the quality of end project. Advancement and promotion? There is no possibility of either. Your job is to remain in the same position for years without complaining, constantly retraining and updating your skills so that those in your charge can ultimately surpass you. Previous experience, none required, but on-the-job training is offered on a continual, exhausting basis. Wages, none. In fact, you must pay those in your charge. Offering frequent raises and bonuses. A balloon payment is due when they turn 18 and attend college. On top of that, when you die, you give them whatever income is left over. Benefits, there is no health or dental insurance, no pension, no tuition reimbursement, no paid holidays, and no stock options. However, the job offers limitless opportunities for personal growth, spiritual growth, and an investment in eternities. Oh, Ann Landers. Parents finally get a job description. I mean, some of it's comical, but it's so very true, isn't it? when you get down to a job description and parents and family, and again a disclaimer, some of you are sitting here and go, whoa, I've sat through two things. A marriage didn't really apply to me. Now we're talking about parenting. That doesn't really apply to me. If you're a grandparent, I think these principles are going to apply to you. If you're just a person in life with in general, trying to figure out how to get along with those around you, I think you're going to be open and find some key biblical principles that still apply to you. And if you're a child of a parent, which qualifies, I think, the vast majority of us in this room, you're going to find some things here, regardless of what age and what spectrum of life you are in there, to be open to and see that God might have in store for us today. So our passage is Ephesians 6. We're only covering four verses. Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. And it reads like this. So children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And Paul says that's it. Ann Landers was a little bit more wordy than that. Paul says, you know what? We spent a whole previous section talking about marriages and healthy marriages. And I don't think it's any coincidence that right after we talk about marriage, Paul now wants to talk about a home life and how we deal with our children. Almost as if to say, hey, the first job description, the first thing as a parent is that agape your spouse. Love your husband. Love your wife. Set up the type of that modeling in a home where your kids can grow up knowing that they are secure, knowing that they're growing up in a loving environment. And now let's tackle the thing of parents. And there's not much to it, is there? I love the way it starts, though. In our little thing, we've entitled Family Makeover. I put four keys to a family makeover. A lot of this I got from a guy, Tom Mercer, who's got a phenomenal church up in the high desert, a great pastor. Glenn Gunderson, a pastor that I was able to work with for almost 8 years in Pomona, who's done an amazing job of not just raising a healthy church, but raising an incredible family alongside that. A guy like Steve Russo, an evangelist that was part of our church that did a lot of parenting stuff with me. And kind of compiling all that, what Paul's saying, and break it down, how can we look at these four verses and all walk away today going, wow, that was good. You know, I needed that. So the first thing, four keys to a family makeover, pursue honor. Pursue honor. If you notice how Paul starts, children, obey your parents in the Lord, not because they're right, not because they're always right, not even at times because they've earned it. We've all come from homes, or at least we all know some homes that are very dysfunctional. And there's times where students, very wise students, although maybe immature as far as years, mature in their thinking, have come and said, look, here's the situation I live in. And you tell me they deserve obedience? And I'm like, no, I'm telling you, obey that Paul says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Remember, we went back to Ephesians, I think it's 21. So we said Christians submit to each other. Remember, we've gone through now the first five chapters, entering chapter 6, and Paul said, if you identify yourself with Christ, a follower of Christ, that means there's going to be a different shift in your life. It's no longer obeying people in your life because they deserve it. It's no longer obeying people in your life because they've lived up or earned it. He said, as a Christian, here's what I want you to do. I want you to obey your parents in the Lord. Not as because of anything that they have done, but simply because of a cross that has bought you, a Christ that has redeemed you. And now out of reverence for him, showing them the love of Christ in you, you start with obedience. But notice he adds onto that. You do this for this is right, but honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with the promise. What is the difference between obedience and honor? Here in your next blanks, if you're taking notes, obedience is the act, honor is the attitude. Obedience is the act, honor is the attitude. Because we can obey with all the wrong attitudes, can't we? Man, we've gotten good at that. Mom tells me to do something and I go in slamming doors and kicking stuff over and clean the room and everything's getting thrown around. And am I being obedient? Well, technically, yeah. Am I honoring? No. Chaos is erupting in the home and I'm the one creating the chaos. As kids growing up, we've all been born with a sin nature. We know how to disobey. Okay? That came naturally. Obedience is something that as children, we have to learn and strive for. And there's also a hidden meaning in this for parents. Parents, then, it is also your role to teach obedience, because disobedience comes naturally. I have never once told my 4-year-old or my 2.5-year-old how to be disobedient. They got that. I don't know if it was from their mom's side or what, but it was just kind of there. It came up. Some of you aren't laughing. My wife's the most amazing saint ever. And so when I say, yeah, just go on. They came that way. They're that way from the beginning, and we know that. Anyone who's been around kids know they just come with that sin nature built in. My role as dad, my wife's role as wife and mom is to figure out, okay, how do we train them to be obedient? And not just obedient, but honor. And it's a checklist you can go through. Are you being obedient? But are you doing it with honor? Not just the actions, but are you doing it with the right attitude? Another way in our talk about submission that we've been going through is this. Submission is obedience. Loving submission is honor. Submission is obedience. A loving submission is honor. We talked about marriage last week, and I didn't ask permission from the individual, and I couldn't figure out the last name and go back and try to clear it up this week. But so I'll be kind of vague. But an individual walked up and said, you know, we've been married for decades. And now we're taking care of parents, which most of us are starting to find ourselves in the role of. One thing with the boomer generation that's gone and with the builder generation before is now we've got a lot of kids that are parenting parents in their older age. And many of us find ourselves in that category. And this individual said, you know what? We had to take in one of my parents. It's very difficult. It's a messy job. There's a lot of changing and cleaning that has to happen. And I listened to my spouse the other day doing that. And not just doing that. But I listened to the way they talked and treated, and it was my parent, they said, not even their parent. But I was listening to the conversation that was happening. And after decades of marriage, this person with the tears in their eyes said, you know what? You've been talking about agape and love, and I'm seeing it in my home. It's not just obeying. It's the attitude you're obeying with. I admit it. Sometimes parents, as they get older, and in-laws, as they get older, boy, they're tough to deal with at times. We've got a set where Amy's mom passed away a few years ago, and now we're just living and serving with her dad, and just it can be difficult at times. And I got to challenge myself, Chris, not just be obedient, but do it with honor, do it with respect, do it with glory, if for no other reason, because they have given me the most incredible gift in my life in their daughter. And Paul says, I want you to obey, and not just obey. I want you to honor. I want you not just to submit, but I want you to do it in a loving way. I want you to do it with the right attitude. Some of this comes out and you realize, okay, some of this makes some sense to us. But realize 2,000 years ago, we've done a little bit of talk about the history this was written in. When Paul was talking about marriages, the whole shock wasn't that he was telling wives to submit. In that day and age and culture, wives were treated as property. Wives were treated as probably less than property in a lot of cases. The whole shock was telling men on how they should love their wives and bringing that equality back into a marriage relationship. The gospel was the first to do that. In the Greek world, the joke was, I mean, you could not tell time by calendar, but by your spouses. And it wasn't uncommon to have 15 to 20 different spouses over a period of almost 20 years. It was just changed like that. Women were treated as a commodity. As long as they pleased you, keep them. As soon as they didn't, for any reason, get rid of them. In the Jewish culture at that time, it wasn't any different. In the Jewish culture, there was this whole writ of divorce that all you had to do was write it up the right way and take it to the temple. And if two witnesses were there at the priest, you divorced your wife. It could be for almost any reason. It could be because you didn't like the way she cooked anymore. It could be because you didn't find her pleasing to the eye anymore. And divorce was running rampant in the Jewish sect. In the Roman world, everyone tried to keep their wife, but she was there simply to take care of the home and help raise the kids, never to be seen outside. And it was expected that a man would have many mistresses for his personal enjoyment and satisfaction outside the home. It is in this era the gospel is being written. It is this era that as we read these chapters today, you might think that doesn't sound out of the ordinary. But back then it was a vast different thing. When we come to kids and children, there's going to be some shocking stuff here for its first readers in the first century. You see, kids were treated even worse. From the moment they were up till about 2 years old, you could decide whether or not you really wanted to keep them. And if you didn't, you took them out to the town dump, especially as infants, and you just left them there. Female babies were abandoned every week by the dozens. A female child, well, that's worse than even a woman. And what good is a female child? It's the boys they're going to carry on. So female infants and fetuses are taken out and laid in the dump, just left to waste. It was up for either Christians to go out and pick them up and try to nurture them back to health, or it was up for those in the slave routes or prostitution to go and try to get them to an age where they could be sold and made money off of. This is the state of children in the Roman Empire. In the Greek world, any child that was thought to be sick, any child that was born with any sort of a handicap, a challenge or deformity, any child that had a different color hair or eye color that you had or wanted, it was completely socially acceptable to put them to death. It's in this age Paul is writing, It's in this age the gospel comes in and starts to put value back on humans, value back on women, value back on children. It's in this age we're writing, and the obedience, you can see, is a tough issue. It's in the day of what's called patria potesta, absolute rule of the Roman father. Every child was under his absolute rule, no questions asked. It's in this that Paul writes, children, I know there's a lot of reasons not to obey. Kids, I know there's a lot of hurt in your past. Grown adults, I know you can go back to the family or the home or the upbringing you have, and you have a thousand reasons why you don't need to love or listen or respect this person. And Paul writes, I want you not just to obey, I want you to honor them. I want you to do it with the right attitude. It's going to be a sign that Christ is in you. It's going to be a sign that you are a new person in Him. You see how it's changed? There's a book out. Oh, and the author just slipped my mind. It's What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? It's a great book, just looking at how the gospel message has changed society back then. And Paul writes saying, okay, I know you got to obey for fear of your life. Now I'm telling you to honor. I'm telling you to do it with the right attitude. There's some verses there if you want to go back on top and look at the Old Testament view of it before things got so distorted. Exodus 21, 15 and 17 says this. Anyone who attacks his father or mother must be put to death. Anyone who curses his father or mother must be put to death. Well, we wouldn't have crowding in our public schools anymore if we were still going back some 4,000 years ago. And yet from the beginning in writing in Exodus and Deuteronomy and Leviticus, it's God from the beginning saying, look, I want you to know how seriously I'm treating this issue of obedience in the home. Listen to this one, Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son, anybody qualify? Don't raise hands. Who does not obey his father and mother, and who will not listen to them when they discipline him, then his father and mother shall take hold of him and bring him to the elders at the gate of his town. They shall say to the elders, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He is a profligate and a drunkard. I had to look it up. Profligate means lacking self-control or extremely wasteful. I'm sure you all knew it, but not on my SATs. Then all the men of his town shall stone him to death. You must purge the evil from among you, and all of Israel will hear of it and be afraid. You think so? Talking about a timeout or being grounded. No, we're way beyond that. It's stoning at the city gate time, son. Let's go. Now, Jewish tradition and narrative say that this was never carried out. But you see somewhere in here the heart of a father saying, look, here's how strict I want to tell you about discipline. Here's what I want to tell you about obedience that's within the home. Proverbs 30:17. It's also written there on your sheet. It says, the eye that mocks a father, that scorns obedience to a mother, will be pecked out by the ravens of the valley. They will be eaten by the vultures. Yee. Some of you are writing those down. I'm putting that on the wall of my kid's room. That's going up. We're back to being a Bible-believing family today. Realize this is Old Testament. This is under the law. This is not in a new grace period of Christ coming into the world. But it does give you a background to what Jesus looks and what God was looking at as far as obedience to the home. Why? Why so severe? Why is it that in Timothy and Titus, when it comes to the qualifications that one must be to be an elder or an overseer in the church, that both of them are going to mention the same thing? The husband but one wife, and they must have kids that are not rebellious. They must have kids that honor and respect. They must have a home that's built on discipline. Because somewhere throughout all these passages, I think it comes out that it starts with the family and then it builds a great home. And then a healthy home will build healthy neighborhoods. Healthy neighborhoods, healthy cities. Healthy cities, healthy states. Healthy states have healthy nations. From the very beginning, the foundation of a healthy society is that home life. And from the very beginning, Paul says, let's talk about marriage. Now let's talk about home life. Parents, you have to create a home life of obedience. It is your role. The moment you had a child, you took that on, ready or not. Even if you didn't live up to all the qualifications in the job description, this one comes with the kid. And children, if you're a follower of Christ, I want you not just to obey, but obey with the right attitude. Obey with a loving heart. Not about whether they deserve it or not, but ask to the Lord. Now, there is a point where there's adult-to-adult relationships. There is a point where you come to a place where you disagree with the parent. We've had that place in our lives. We've had that place when you have a first kid and mom comes in and rearranges the baby's room without asking. To me, not a big deal. To another part of my marriage, a big deal. There is a place even in disobedience. There is a place, though, even in that, where you can come and still honor a parent. I believe even where you get off on the wrong track, even as adult-to-adult conversations with parents, it doesn't say you have to do everything they say, but even in your disobedience, even in letting them know we got to go a different route, you do that with honor. You do that with love. You do that with the right attitude. You do that out of respect. I'm saying, Mom, we love you here. We love what you're doing. We love your gifts of help. We love the way you want to help. But Mom, here's what's got to be changed to stay here and to do this well. And you do that with honor. You do that with loving submission. Second key to a family makeover, acknowledge the importance of honor. Acknowledge the importance of honor. You say, okay, it's one thing to pursue honor. Now what? Now acknowledge how important that is. Understand what that brings to a home. Understand what that does to a family. See, to really pursue something, you got to value it. To really go after something, you got to really want it. And I think that's where Paul's going on this thing of honor. Acknowledge the importance of honor. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Have you ever noticed how much better the family system runs when there's honor and mutual submission involved? Have you ever noticed that these few verses we've been looking at over the last few weeks, if we have spouses that truly are in mutual submission and love and respect to each other, if we have a home that is truly built on honor and obedience, do you know how well-oiled and peaceful of a machine that is? Proverbs 17:1, a verse I wrote under there, says, better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. Don't you like that? Better just a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting that has strife. Boy, it's better just to have a simple meal of just bread and butter with a family that gets along and honors and respects and loves than to have the most incredible buffet, but there's nothing but arguing and friction going on. Children, realize this. Those that are listening that are still under a parent's authority and still living at home, boy, it is so much better when you just get along and do what they want. This past week, we were staying down at the Bahia Resort. I was speaking at a conference, so they put my family up for a week, and in the mornings, after the morning session was over, I took my girls out to the sand where they got this little playground area, and the June gloom was still kind of in there, and it was too cold to go in the water, but we could play on the swings, and they wanted to go down and just look at the water. We're right there, I should have known, bad idea, but right there, well, I'm a big guy, I can handle just two little kids, so let's just go down and look at the water, and the tide was out, and there's puddles in the sand there, and I kept telling the girls, don't get in the water. Don't get in the water. And they would get as close as they could until the sand started sliding down. And I'd pull them back. Don't get in the water. Well, Karis, God bless her 2.5-year-old heart, is drawn to water in such a way that Dad's size and authority and commanding voice has absolutely no effect against the puddle in her life. And she jumps in the water. And it's on her pants and on, and it's cold and shivering, and she just looks up with this grin, and I pick her up, Karis, you get a timeout now. And that little lip starts to quiver. Oh, and I know at this moment we're kind of on work vacation. Just give in, let her know she's got to listen to Dad. Because there's a point in time where this might be a life or death situation. There's a point in time where this might be a go to the hospital or not situation. And she's got to learn to listen to Dad. So I take her up and sit her on the bench where Mom is sitting there, and I go back down to the water's edge with Selah. And as I'm playing with Selah, I can hear Karis crying all the way down the beach. And it has just broken her heart. And I don't know how to get through to a 2.5-year-old. If you just listen, we can play on the beach. This can be great. It's that valuing honor. When you understand, look, just doing it God's way, creating a home and going along with parents in that obedient way, it is so much better. It's the only commandment with the promise that it may go well with you, that you will enjoy the land that you've been promised, that you will have a long life of joy. Not that you will necessarily live longer, but that you will have more joy in life. Matthew 5:9 says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Acknowledge the importance of honor. We're at the resort, and I hear a kid and a mom talking at the next table next to us, and the daughter is just screaming at her mom about, you don't do anything for me, you're always lying, and it's an embarrassing scene. And I'm thinking, oh, girl, you're at the Bahia Resort, Mission Bay, it doesn't get better than this, it's beautiful. And you're going to spend the whole meal arguing and fighting? We got zoo passes that run out next month, so we go to the zoo since we're down there so close. And at the zoo, as soon as we get in the gate, there's a mom fighting with another kid. And I'm like, you're at the zoo. This is the biggest world zoo ever. You can't walk this thing without passing out. And you've made it 20 foot inside the gate and you're arguing. Isn't it amazing what we choose to make battles over? And Paul says, look, it's going to go better with you. It's a commandment with a promise. Not just pursue honor, but acknowledge the importance of honor. That it's going to bring you more joy. That sure you might have to give in. That sure as a child you might realize, you know what, mom said it, dad said it. Just do it and be done with it. Why create the chaos that goes along with it? And out of that you are going to learn and earn more trust and more respect. I know I'm teaching kind of the wrong crowd here today. Some of you are going, go next door. My junior hire's next door. They'll get the message. Third thing. Parents, reaffirm your child's value. Parents, reaffirm your child's value. We've looked a little bit at the steps, both in obedience and honor. The child's responsibility, us still as kids' responsibility, but also you as parents' responsibility to teach obedience, to teach honor, to teach that the better life comes from being obedient. And now it shifts more toward just the parent's side. You say, parents, reaffirm your child's value. Where did you get that? Well, I took kind of the negative verse, taking it to a positive. Because in verse 4, it says this, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Whoa. Here, that might be common sense. You rewind 2,000 years ago. Whoa. Don't ever tell a dad what he can or cannot do in the life of his child. Realize we're back under this age of patria protesta. We're back under this where it's father's absolute authority. But what Paul's saying is a parenting style. Today would apply to both mom and dad. Mom, dad, do not exasperate your children. Don't punish in such a way. Don't critique in such a way. Don't discipline in such a way where it tears them down. That has never been a form of discipline. The way God disciplines us is always to instruct, always to build up, always to encourage, always to make better, never to tear me down. No matter what I've done wrong, how far I have fallen in life, God has never come alongside to tear me down. He's there to value me. He's there to build me back up. Paul's writing this, and in this culture, this is just out of the blue. Fathers, in this day and age also, mothers, do not exasperate your children. Luke 17, 1 through 2 is there in your notes. You might want to underline it. Jesus says to his disciples, things that cause people to sin are bound to come, but woe to that person through whom they come. It would be better for him to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than for them to cause one of my little ones to sin or to stumble. Parents, I know there's things that are going to cause your children to sin. I know there are things to come to cause your children and my children to stumble. But woe to that person who is causing a child to sin or to stumble. Jesus said it'd be better to go off the end of the oceanside pier and tie a millstone. Remember, we're talking about a 300-pound stone used that donkeys would pull in circles for grinding flour and wheat and grain. Tie that around your neck and jump off the pier. Yeah, I don't care what type of swim lessons you had growing up. You don't have good odds there. And Jesus says, it's better for that picture to happen than to you to cause one of my little ones to stumble, than to you to bring in one of my little ones to sin. See, children are born already to rebel. It's kind of their job, you know? It's a sin nature. They're going to be brought up to rebel and rebel and rebel. As parents, it is your job to put that line there, to draw that line in the sand. And whenever they hit up against them, to let them know, you're not going there. I don't care how many times you cross it, there's discipline that has to happen. It's that job of training an adolescent. Some of you say, Chris, they just don't get that. I know. You know why? Because when they think, they don't use their brains. And I know parents have thought that for the ages. It wasn't until modern technology came along that we really had proof of it. Harvard Medical Institute started using the MRI to start tracking. How do we make thought processes? How do we connect things? They realized in asking adolescents a series of questions between the age of 13 and 18 that something was missing. None of them used their frontal lobe. None of them used this frontal cortex. They all used a part of the brain in the back. And those of you in the medical field, I'm probably going to botch it, but I think it's called something like amygdala. All right, I don't know. They used one of those things in the back of the brain. It's where creativity stems from. It's where that gut instinct comes from. It's where that pleasure drive comes from. But you know what the front of the brain is used for? When ask adults the exact same list of questions in the MRI and watch how the brain processes, adults all answer the questions on the frontal lobe. and the frontal cortex, because that's where rationale comes from. That's where long-term consequences come from. That's where we see the big picture. That's why it is so hard to take the gospel message. And as much as we can to teach and teach and teach and train our youth, but they don't see long-term. Don't tell me what my sexual activity is going to do in my marriage. Don't tell me what it's going to end down the road. I just know what it means now. And you're like, something's missing in you, kid. And we're like, yeah, it's not even developed yet. The pathways to that rationale processing that we all use in the front of our lobes, in the frontal cortex, hasn't even developed yet in adolescence. They're missing something, people. It's your job to come alongside and understand that and see the big picture and don't fight on their level, but just let them know you're made to rebel. I'm made to draw the lines. Here's the lines, and I'm going to win this battle. And some of you say, but that's so hard. They might run away or they might rebel. They will. It is their job. It is your job as parent to say, here is the line. And if you run away and if you ever want to come back, the door is open, but the line will still be here. And when the friends room runs out, they'll find out and they'll come back. And you need to greet them at the door with open arms and a prodigal son hug and say, welcome home. The line's still here. Okay? It's tough. I know it's tough, but parents, reaffirm your child's value. Wood said this, one of the favorite Bible commentators I like to read when I study. He said the gospel brought on new responsibilities for parents by insisting that the feelings of a child must be brought into consideration. Novel idea. The gospel brought a whole new approach to child raising. A whole new responsibility for parents by insisting that the feelings of a child must be brought into consideration. When you discipline your child, it is not just about what is right and what is wrong. It is about how can they get this? How can they understand this? And what is the feeling of the child at the time? Parents, your feelings are accountable at the time also. I love the way Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones put it. He said, when you are disciplining a child, you should have first controlled yourself. What right have you to say to your child that he or she needs discipline when you obviously need it yourself? Ooh, no elbows right now. Man, as a parent, it's so easy. 5 times I showed you the puddle. I told you what not to do. I picked you up and placed you on the other side of the puddle, and you went right back into it. That loses patience. It is so easy just to raise your voice. It is so easy to do something out of your own emotions. But if you are trying to teach your child discipline, then you yourself must be disciplined in the act of disciplining. Okay? Otherwise, do you see the irony there? Telling your child how to act and trying to punish them for being disobedient and is still disciplined in their life when you are not exhibiting any discipline with maybe your speech, your tone of voice, your temper, your anger at that moment? Yeah. There's times then where I will tell Sailor or Karis that their punishment's going to be, and I just tell them, I'm just not doing it yet. I saw what you picked up and I saw how you hit your sister in the head with it. You know what? You're getting a spanking for that, but not right now. Because that angered me. I don't like seeing my kid get hit. And if I try to discipline you right now, I don't know the way that looks. I'm not a guy that loses my anger, but I don't want to be angry disciplining my kids. I think that's what Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones was getting at. If you're disciplining, make sure you're disciplined when you're doing it. Make sure it's done out of love. Make sure it's always clearly said, here's what's happening and here's why. I love the way Amy has taught me how to do this. We don't discipline standing up. We are never towering over our kids. We're always on the ground with them, either eye to eye or a little bit lower. And we always talk through, here's what you did. Do you know what you did? Do you know what you should have done? Do you know what comes now? All right. It's discipline. And our child knows they're doing it for me, to protect me, or to provide for me a better future. They're doing it out of love for me, not out of anger toward me. Parents, it's no wonder we got homes where we've got lack of discipline. We don't know how to control a child when all it is an argument match. And you've jumped into the war with them. And we have got to be the adult. We have got to be the mature ones. We've got to be the ones that say, you know what? I'm not getting into that with you. I'll explain to you why and what happened. And here's what we're doing. And that's it. And we don't get into the ranting and raving or, God forbid, the pushing or shoving. And Paul brings into a day and age where that is how you treated a kid. Look, you don't exasperate your kid. You don't bring them to a point of anger. You don't bring them to the point of resentment. You don't bring them to the point where you are tearing down their value. They are a child of God. And Jesus says, woe to anyone that causes one of my little ones to sin or stumble. David Guzik wrote this: harsh punishment and tearing down gives unnecessary justification to a child's natural tendency to rebel. Hey, when you treat them like that, they've already got a natural tendency to rebel. When you treat them like that, you are just putting fuel on the fire. It's not necessary. Parents, reaffirm your child's value. Disobedience must be punished for obedience to be learned. But how that is done goes a long way into creating a home that's built on honor and submission and trust. Number four, family makeover. Commit yourself to your child's development. Commit yourself to your child's development. I know development is the word you got to fill in and then you're done with that sentence because that's what we do at North Coast. But circle commit. Circle commit. And if you want to, right above that, constant effort and mindset. It's a constant effort and mindset. A constant effort and mindset. So you commit yourself to your child's development. Some of you say, well, we got a kid. We're doing that. We're development. No. It's not just that you're raising a kid, but that you are cognitively, consciously doing it in such a way where you say, you know what? I am building into this kid. It's got to be a constant effort, a constant mindset. Because just as children's natural reaction is to be rebellious and to sin nature, parents, I got to tell you, I am learning already. It is so much easier not to do anything about your kids, isn't it? Just shut the door. I don't know who's screaming at who, but just shut the door. Turn up the volume a little bit more. That's a natural reaction. You commit yourself to the development of your child. You commit yourself to saying, you know what? I'm stepping in and I'm doing this right. Those of you that are parents have the most amazing job description in the world. God has given you one of His creation to raise and train, to develop and equip. What my wife does as a full-time job in ministry is amazing to me. Absolutely amazing to me. What she gets to do with those girls day in and day out when a lot of the times I'm not home. It is amazing to me. And I've watched them develop already into just such incredible, beautiful little girls. Working with teenagers from some 16 years, now 17 years, I know the time's going to come. I know they grow up. I know there's tough times ahead. But I'm already doing things right now at 2.5 and 4 only for the purpose of knowing they will be 17. See, in youth ministry, one of the chaoses was by the time I was dealing with the family, it was too late. And parents would come saying, what should we do? And really the only answer is set the clock back 15 years. That's where it started. Those of you that are raising up young children in your home, it starts now. The type of teenagers you want them to be starts now. It starts now. I am like loving my daughters and letting them know my love and affection in both words and touch and hugs and playing. And I want to continue that as long as they'll let me be in the same room with them. Because I know their dating relationship and how they allow a guy into their lives and intimacy with them is a direct correlation of how well dad has loved them. I know that because I've worked with teenagers all my life. I don't know what to do at this age that well, but I know this. I have got to love them in such a way that I'm going to start protecting them when they're 17 now. Now. Not when they're 15, 16, 17, but now. Commit yourself to your child's development. Some of you have there a training or teaching or training and admonishing in your Bible. I love the way it says that. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. We're back in verse 4. Instead of exasperating, instead of tearing them down, instead of bringing them anger and resentment, instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. I love those words, that training, that teaching through corrective discipline. There is a role you have to play, and it's going to be hard on you at times. Discipline is not fun as a dad, but I've got to do it to protect and provide for them. And not just the teaching, but that training, that modeling through instruction. That's why I say you got to commit yourself to your child's development. It is a daily process of doing the things I naturally don't want to do, of doing the things that take more time and effort, but understanding I owe it to them. I brought them into this world. It is my job and Amy's job to make sure we produce the best we can through them. There will be a day and age where God has given their own free choice, their own free will, and a day and age where they can act on that. And right now we're simply laying the foundation to give ourselves the best possible shot to get them through that. To make the right decisions. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9, there in your notes. It says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them down on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. You wonder what that teaching and training and the admonition of the Lord or as the Lord? That's it. You know what the Bible is assuming? The Bible is assuming this. It's there in your notes. Kids spell love. T-I-M-E. That's how your children spell love. T-I-M-E. From the very beginning, God assumes, as Christian parents, you will be walking the road with them. You will be sitting with them. You will be lying down with them. You will be going through life alongside them. That has become so increasingly difficult in this day and age, hasn't it? Where we have the two incomes just to keep what we've set us up in our current luxury of living. I understand that. I understand for single parents, this is so incredibly difficult. You that are doing that and doing that well are just the heroes right now in this church. Those of you that are left to do a job that two people can't possibly do on their own, but with the help of God, and doing it alone, man, you have my admiration and my respect. But the Bible assumes, here's how it starts. T-I-M-E. It's the time you spend with your kids. And it's not quality time. It's not making up for all the weeks gone and all the trips gone in one great big weekend. It's the quantity of time. As they lie down, as they get up, as they sit, as you walk with them on their own, as you sit and talk with them, I want you to teach them, train them, impress these things on their heart, build character, instruct them, train them. All kids need a parent to do is this, your last blanks. Number one, to encourage. What do I do in that time? If I'm supposed to be spending time with the kids, what I do? Number one, encourage. Tell them what they can be. Tell them what they can do. Tell them what you already see in their life. Tell them the little things. Even as infants, even as toddlers, I love the way you're a big sister. I love the way you pick up. I love the way you eat. I love the way you listen. Encourage. Hand in hand with that is praise. It's easy for us to jump on the things they're doing wrong. If that is our role as parents in life, to discipline and to critique and in constructive ways, then make sure we are praising them at least two times as much as we are being critical in their lives. Look for ways to praise them. My kid doesn't do much. All he does is ride the skateboard 24 hours a day. Oh, that's amazing. So your kid's got some great athletic ability. He loves the outdoors. He's working out. He's strengthening his muscles. He's burning out all that energy that his body's just creating as an adolescent.
Well, I guess so. But he makes all noise, he jumps off stuff, and he lands himself on the brick, and he gets all cut up. Oh,
so your kid takes risks, so your kid's pushing the limits. I mean, praise him just the way he does that. Praise any little thing you can do in your child's life, praise them. Because they are growing up in a day and an age where they don't get much praise. They're growing up in a world that doesn't give them much encouragement, but surrounds them with discouragement. Surrounds them with visual images and pictures that they can't possibly live up to. And every little soul and every little heart is desperately crying out for someone to encourage and someone to praise me for whatever little things I do, for whatever little things I can come up with. Find excuses daily to praise your kids. Secondly, listen to understand. Get the last part of that. Listen to understand. So formerly I had a mom come in. You've got to do something with my 17-year-old. We can't do anything with him. Something's going on. We don't know what it is. He won't let us in. Pretty typical sometimes of 17-year-olds. So my question, well, what type of relationship? We have a great relationship. We talk all the time. What do you mean you talk? We talk when he comes home. We talk in the morning. We talk all the time. I said, well, let me talk to him. See what happens. We go to the arcade. We blow about 10 bucks in the nickel arcade. We go out to In-N-Out Burger. We sit over shakes. We just start talking. And one of the things I bring up to him, Kyle, how's stuff going at home? You know, parents. Yeah. Do they listen much to you? Not much. Tell me about your mom. She seems to care about you a lot. When's the last time you guys actually talked? What do you mean? And when's the last time you were able to really share with her and you felt like she was listening and understood you? And he thought for a moment. He said, you know, she picked me up from school and we went to McDonald's. And I remember sitting there and we just kind of talked. And I don't know why. But long after we were done eating, we still sat there and just kind of talked. Makai, when was that? He said, I was in the third grade. That's the last time I remember talking to my mom. But you ask mom and they talk daily. Parents, don't talk at your kids. Talk with your kids. Treat them as an undeveloped mission field. It is a strange culture that you have got to understand. They speak a different language. They have a different garb. They poke holes in their lips, for Pete's sake. Come on. Speak to them and treat them as natives. As a missionary, we don't go into culture and blast people. As the Joneses have pointed out, as a culture, we go in and learn the language. We go in and live alongside. We go in and earn the right to speak into and speak with. Treat your adolescent like that. Listen to understand. Ask open-ended questions. Do you have the type of home and the type of communication in your family that allows for the open exchange of ideas without being critical or judgmental? Do you allow yourself to be questioned? Hey, we're long past the Roman days. Allow yourself to be questioned. Allow every rule to be questioned. That way they know exactly why it's there and where it comes from. And if you don't have a good reason for the rule, then probably get rid of it. Choose your battles wisely. Leads us to our next thing. Set realistic boundaries and expectations. Set realistic boundaries and expectations. I had a mom one time ask if she can get her daughter's deposit back from a camp, a water ski trip we were going on. I said, you know, I talked to your daughter last week. She was just so thrilled about going. Well, we took that away from her. I'm all, why? And she said, grades. I'm all, really? Yeah. So I thought your daughter was always just a great student. She seems to be winning awards and stuff. Oh, she's a great student. She's been straight A's since kindergarten. She's into her junior year and she's taking calculus and she got a B+ in the class. And the mom was frustrated because it wasn't the first time. We made her take the class again and it's her second B+ in calculus. And she says, I don't know what to do with my daughter, but if you can ever give me any help or any instruction, I'm open to it. And I said, then we need to talk. My dad would have beat the tar out of me if I got a B+ in calculus. It's like, who are you cheating off of? What are you doing? Are you kidding? But more importantly, mom, do you understand what you have just taught your daughter? You have just taught your daughter that 16 years of school, straight A's, and once in a B+, twice in one of the hardest subjects imaginable. You understand what you've just told her about herself? After all that year and all that excellence, you take a trip from her. Well, that's your way of seeing things. We have our ways. Can we have our money back? Yeah, you're the parent that God put in that situation. Set realistic boundaries and expectations. I had another mom that come. John would never keep his room clean. It was a mess. The house was a mess. Single parent mom doing a great job with a couple kids. What can you help me do with this kid? I'm like, why do you want him to clean your room? What do you mean? Why do you want him to clean his room? I don't want him to be a slob. I don't want him to grow up and turn off any mates or any possible suitors he can find because the guy's a slob. He's unkept. He stinks. All right. What other chores does he have in the house? He has to clean four of the rooms in the house and do the dishes. Does he do those? No. Why don't you tell John this? Why don't you tell John, look, if you can take care of the rest of the house, because that's what you want to make sure that he knows how to clean up after himself. If he can take care of the rest of the house, then he can do whatever he wants in his room. Do you know what he would do to his room? I don't. I can only imagine. You know, for 2.5 months, John did an amazing job with his chores, and mom never had to get on him. And for 2.5 months, his room was a mess. When you went into his room, you had to step up to get into it because of all the stuff in piles. All of his life, he's been nagged about keeping his room clean. He is 17, and now he's just let it go. But the chores are being done. And the purpose behind the rule, mom is saying, I think I can live with this. At least I know he knows how to do this stuff. And you know what happened after 2.5 months? John took the whole weekend off, and he took everything out of his room and put it in the hallway. And he decided what to throw away and what to keep. And from that point on, his room was pretty good. And mom never once gave him anything about his room. Why do you have rules? Explain that with your kids. Here's why they're here. They're to protect or to provide for you. And if you don't have a great reason for the rules, then don't have the rules. Because we end with this. Rules without relationship equals rebellion. Rules without relationships equal rebellion. If it is nothing but rules in your relationship, if it is nothing but rules and do's and don'ts, and you don't have that time, you're not encouraging, you are not praising, you are not building up, then I guarantee you, their job is to rebel. Your job is to try to hold that line, and you have got a battle on your hands. Choose what battles you want to fight. Choose what battles you can say, let them win that one. That's another great thought, parents. If you are winning all the battles, it's not healthy. Create some battles just to lose. So they know, okay, I'll give you that one. And they're like, whoa, I got that one. Because there are some battles in your home that you cannot afford to lose. There are others. I create lines and stuff just to have them talk and say, all right, it's done. Oh, we got that one? Yeah. You can have that one. Because I know it doesn't matter. And the things that matter, we're going to hold to as a family. So God, thank you for Ephesians 6, for a look at family. God, thank you that today we can come across the job description of parents and kids. And God, once again, may you find the homes of this church be healthy homes based on honor, based on mutual submission, based on respect, based on love. Open homes where we have dialogue and communicate to listen, to understand, not just to be heard. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed today's study from God's Word. For more information, or if you'd like additional copies, please contact us at area code 760-724-6700. Our mailing address is North Coast Church, 1132 North Melrose Drive, Vista, California, 92083. Or visit our website at www.northcoastchurch.com. God bless you and thanks for listening.